Sit back, relax, and open their mind. You are now listening to the Paranormal Patriot.
You are talking about the nonsensical ravings of a lunatic mind.
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories.
You know, it is, it's just awfully good that someone with the temperament of Donald Trump is not in charge of the law in our country.
Because you'd be in jail.
You know, we've seen three glowing figures out in the field. It seemed like their heads were glowing.
This is Harvey Gott, and I'm the host of Satire Is Not Dead. Join me every Wednesday for new episodes. Satire Is Not Dead is in the Cinescape Media Network. You can learn more about this program and other programs by visiting cinescape.media.
Welcome one and welcome all and welcome to another episode of the Paranormal Patriot. Thank you for joining me this week. As always, wearing the tinfoil hat, my name is Tom Velasquez. I am your always gracious host. Thank you again for joining me. This week's show, you know, things are tough all over. I mean, honestly, life in general is tough. I have been promoting and hyping up this whole series of shows I wanted to do, and every time I plan to do it, something else comes up. And a lot of people are probably thinking, oh my God, Tom, you're not going to talk politics again. Nope, I'm not. But you know, the shows I want to do are talking about how we were created. There's no way we could have evolved into what we are now. And it really celebrates the miracle of life. And to be honest, after the news I received today, I'm not in the mood to talk about the miracle of life. You know, cancer's a horrible disease. And to be honest with you, call me a conspiracy theorist, but there's a cure out there. There is. And Big Pharma will not allow the cure to come out because there goes their $10 trillion whatever dollar industry a year. But we just found out today, my family, that my mom, who has been just, oh, she's such a fighter. Fighting. You know, she's not going to win her fight. And it just hits home how fragile life is. I mean, for those of you who have been listening for a long time, you know that not only am I dealing with cancer with my mom, but I'm dealing with cancer with my wife that, you know, she is just fighting. And there's going to be a time where the fight isn't going to be good enough. And it just, again, puts into perspective how short our life is. If you really, truly think about it, I mean, most of us have 70, 80 years. That's really not a long time. Considering the first couple of years, we really have no idea what's going on. We don't remember it. And then for some of us, the last 50, 60 years, we have no idea what's going on. I mean, honestly, you could say that half of America right now has no idea what's going on. But in all honesty, I mean, jokes aside, I don't even know what to talk about on this show. I didn't want to not do a show. I'm honestly struggling to do a show, because my heart really isn't into it right now. What I planned on doing this week, I couldn't do in good faith. I couldn't do it in good conscience because I am just not in the mood to talk about the miracle of life. Because what my family is going through is, it's basically the opposite. Yes, we are here, we are living our lives, and the fact that we are here is an absolute miracle. But I think a lot of us take for granted how short our lives are. One of my coworkers, his neighbor, 43 years old, has three kids, a 10-year-old, an 8-year-old, and a 6-month-old. was killed in a car accident on Wednesday. You just don't know. You have no idea when your time is going to come. And we place so much emphasis on making money and going to our jobs and doing the things that really don't matter. I've said it for a long time. I look at my life and I can't say I'm not happy with my life. I mean, we have a decent life. I mean, look at everything I'm going through. I've got my wife who has cancer, it's terminal. She's not going to get better. She's fighting it and she's staying strong. So we don't know how long she has. But then I get news that my mom, who basically has 3 to 6 months to live, who knows what's going to happen with my dad. But you look at this, and I have to keep this into perspective. There's somebody, always somebody, unfortunately, that has it worse than you. We've all seen the heartbreaking stories of the families who half of them didn't get out of the house in time during a fire. Or my coworker's neighbor who his wife is now stuck with 3 kids. She wasn't working. How is she going to support herself? What about those kids? And when I say that, I don't mean to belittle or downplay anything you're going through. But it's true. There's always someone a little bit worse off than you. I mean, think about it. The majority of my listeners live in the United States. We are pretty lucky to do so. Yes, the United States is a shit show right now, and I understand that. And I'm trying my best not to talk about that because I said I wasn't going to talk politics. But we've got it pretty good. I mean, you look at some of these countries where you're not eating for days on end. You don't have running water. You can die of just a basic type of disease every day because you don't have medical care like we do here in the States or in any quote-unquote civilized nation. Not that those nations or countries aren't civilized, but we'll call them technologically advanced countries like Canada, United States, Britain, Italy, Russia, you know, Japan, stuff like that. You know what I'm talking about. It's these third world countries, per se, that, you know, we've got it pretty good. Everybody is going to die. That's a sad fact. And what this news that I got today drove home to me is, I don't care what your political affiliations are. I don't care what you believe. Life is too short. You know, that's my mother. She is the one that gave birth to me. And how do you say goodbye? Some people may call it a blessing. In a way, it's almost like a curse because I am 49 years old and I have not dealt with much death in my life. I lost an uncle that I really cared about, a couple aunts and an uncle that I cared about. I didn't see much of them in the last 15 years, and I lost a really, really good friend. But family-wise, both of my parents are still here. All my brothers and sisters are here. I've got a ton of nieces and nephews and cousins. They're all here. How do you say goodbye? Knowing that, you know, I may go up to see my mom, and that might be the last time I see her, that I can talk to her. I don't know how to say goodbye. I don't want to cry in front of her. I don't want to be a mess like I'm turning into right now. I don't know if that's the right answer. Should I be a mess? Should I show her that I care? Because, I mean, I don't think bawling and being a slobbering misfit is going to prove it to her. She knows I love her. But by me showing no emotion, and trust me, I hold... A lot of people say I wear my emotions on my sleeve, and that's not true. I mean, yes, I can be emotional at times when I'm frustrated. You can see it. But my true emotions are held deep, deep inside of me. That's why I had so many health issues, is because I just held everything in. And for the human body, stress is horrible. I mean, it's just downright horrible. And I did nothing but hold the stress in. I didn't show my true emotions. You knew me as a fun-loving guy. I mean, I've had so many people, my boss is one of them, that said, you know, you are one of the strongest people I know. You're going through so much shit right now, and you come to work, and you do your job, and you do a great job, and a smile on your face, and nobody can tell that you're going through anything. I can play the part. I can play the role. You know, I've got a job to do, and to be honest with you, with everything that's been going on in my life, and trust me, guys, you have no idea. My wife and my mother are just the tip of the iceberg right now, but to me, work is a diversion, and I need a diversion. You know, I was at a different position at a different company when I found out my wife had cancer, and I, from the bottom of my being, hated being at that place. I didn't realize until after I left, I would literally get panic attacks, anxiety, walking into that dealership. I was a service writer at a dealership here in Michigan, and I could never figure out why I'm so out of breath. I was, at that time, I was going to the gym. I was running a 10-minute mile. There's no reason I should be walking into work and being out of breath like I was gassed. Well, I realized looking back that I was having anxiety attacks. I'd sit in my car and pump myself up. Okay, you can do this. You can go into work. I was so miserable. So being at a job now that I thoroughly enjoy and, you know, I deeply care about how that business does and being just absolutely respected and appreciated by your boss makes a big difference in the way that I am able to cope with this. I hate the fact that I've got to go to work to just get away. I feel I should be strong enough to get through this because everybody does it. Everybody deals with death at one point in their life. I'm having a hard time. I mean, I guess this is a cry to all of my listeners out there who have gone through this. How do you say goodbye when you know your mother or your father are not going to be here in 3 to 6 months? How do you say goodbye? I mean, do you act like nothing's going on? Just act like, hey, how you doing, Mom? I don't want to sit there and, you know, now all of a sudden everybody's over and we're hugging and kissing. And truth be told, I moved away in 2001. I was tired of all the drama. And I don't regret that decision. But it really took away time that I was able to spend with my family. And especially my mother and my father. My mom would constantly want me to go up. I mean, I live an hour and a half, well, an hour and 10 minutes away. And there are times that it just wasn't possible. And it got to the point where I'd always go up there. I'd always go to the brothers and sisters' birthday parties. And we'd have them down here. Nobody from my family would show up. And I finally said, screw it. I'm not making the effort. And look back now. And was that the right call? I mean, is family the most important thing? I have my immediate family. I have my wife and my kids. They are the most important thing to me. I get that. But what about my brothers, my sisters, my mother, my father? Aren't they important too? I don't know how to feel on this. I'm asking for some advice. I need, you know, I have a following that's just phenomenal. A huge following of people. Somebody out there has got to be able to give me some advice. How do you react? How do you go visit someone you love knowing that may be the last time you see them? I mean, what do you do? Do you slobber all over them? Do you act like nothing's wrong? I mean, I don't know how to act. This is all new to me, and I'm not liking it. Over the years, I've been called a type A personality. I mean, I'm the type of guy that, I'm a big guy. I'm not huge. I'm not like you'd see on the TLC channel, but I'm a big guy. I could stand to lose some weight. But I'm the type of guy that wants to go to the gym one time and come out looking like The Rock. I want to have control. I don't have control over this. I can't stop it. I can't do anything to help her. And I feel helpless. I don't like the feeling. I really don't. How do you deal with it? Somebody give me some clues. Contact me at ghostseeker4@charter.net. Really, I need your help on this. I don't know how to deal with this. I'm sure a lot of people are going to say, just go with what you feel, Tom. Do with what you feel is right. I'm numb right now. Literally, truly numb. I am doing this show just on pure autopilot. But I guess what this whole first segment, I mean, again, all on autopilot. I have no idea what I'm going to talk about on this show. But I guess what I'm trying to just relay and just drive home to everyone is we don't know how much time we have. We need to tell those that we love that we love them. We need to spend time with those that we love. We don't know how much time we have. It can end in a blink of an eye. Always, always say I love you before you leave. Never go to bed angry. This is hard. I don't know. Again, I'm numb. I'm just completely numb. I don't know how to feel. And, you know, a lot of you people, a lot of my listeners always comment to me, hey, you're a great voice. Thanks for the support. Keep it up. I need your support right now. Help me out, guys and girls. Sorry. Let me know that it's going to be all right. If anybody's gone through this, let me know. Contact me at ghostseeker4@charter.net and just tell me it's going to be okay. Because right now it doesn't feel like it. We're going to take a quick break. You are listening to the Paranormal Patriot. I have no idea what I'm going to talk about next segment. That's the crazy part. But sit back, relax, open that mind. Again, you're listening to the Paranormal Patriot. I'll be right back. Everywhere I go, in these busy streets, I'm a criminal. Every day and night, moving slow-mo with a fast life. I'm on the edge of the sky.
This is Jim.
Hey, and this is Mike.
Be sure to listen to
the Jim and Mike Talk Podcast.
Two Gen Xers walk into a bar
to talk about music
and what moves them.
You can find us on iTunes, Spotify,
and our host site, Podbean.
And now, on to the Paranormal Patriot.
Okay, so I said I wasn't going to talk politics on the next couple shows. Things might change. I'm doing everything I can to not talk politics this week, and I'm not going to. All I'm going to tell you is last week's show, The Hate is Strong, I posted it on numerous sites, and I had numerous comments. And literally all these comments did is just reinforce exactly what I was saying. I literally had 40, 50 comments from people on these sites. In 95% of them were just derogatory. Only one person that commented actually listened to my show. The rest of them just read the description of what the show was about. And I purposely, in a way, kind of was vague on the description because I didn't want to alienate. I want the other side to listen. And only one person actually listened to the show and then came out and said, hey, you know, I don't know where you're getting this proof that Antifa and BLM were part of this Capitol raid, but there's no proof. So I sent a link, and unfortunately I was unaware that the link from the Washington Post had been corrected, ironically, to show that, oh, by the way, facial recognition didn't prove that BLM and Antifa were involved. My bad. And I'm like, hey, you know, my bad. I didn't see that it was redacted, and, you know, if that's the case, so be it. But, you know, it didn't even take a week, and now everything I said was absolutely correct. But I did that show to kind of tell people, hey, let's ease up on one another. Let's just, if you don't agree with me, oh well. Yeah, that wasn't the case on the comments. Because I was called an effing Nazi, a fascist, a racist, a white supremacist, a Trump-tard, you know, you name it. I was called it, if it had to be derogatory. And the thing is, nobody else listened to this show. They just read the show description and went off of that. And the thing is, the best part is a lot of people were saying, oh, I can see you, who you support, you're on Parler. Well, Parler's not a thing anymore, apparently. But rather than hear me out, these people, and a guy named Bunny, and yes, I said a guy named Bunny, was just going off on me. Absolutely going off on me. And I'm just, you know, killing with kindness. Hey, I appreciate you. I appreciate your views. You and I don't get along, or you and I don't think alike. But you know what? I appreciate you commenting on this post. F you, you effing Nazi. F you, you effing retard. I believe he hoped I died at one time. And again, just proving my point. We can't continue this. We cannot, as a nation, continue to be so divided that we just can't even begin to think of other people's views if they differ from ours. Because at that point, we're done. We are absolutely done. But I wanted to just let you know, last week's show had no effect. It just didn't. It didn't. I mean, if you thought last week's show was good, let me know, because I'm looking at that show going, that was a complete and utter waste of my time to tell people, just relax. Because the responses I got just proved that, no, it didn't work. So we're going off of politics now. And I want to, you know, you've heard me say so many times on this show, we as human beings think we are the epitome. We are the most intelligent species on this planet, and we may or may not be. But how? Think about it. How many times during the course of a month do you see a headline that says, this changes the whole view on what humans thought, or this totally rewrites human history? It's constant. We only know what we think we know. We have an idea of what's going on around us. But let's be honest with one another. We are stunted by the fact that we don't know everything we think we do. If we did, we would know the mysteries of the universe. Hell, we don't even know what's in our oceans right now. But we are sitting there writing theses and writing essays and telling people global climate change is because of man, that we are killing the planet. We don't know that. How, you know, we're being told that the planet is billions and billions of years old. Do we know? Well, yes, it's based on carbon dating. Who invented carbon dating? Quick answer, humans. We are using our knowledge, what we understand. We humans, there is someone in the human species that decided that carbon dating was the end-all be-all. That's it. Everything is carbon dated, and what we say is carbon dated is correct. So our whole timeline of this planet is based on a human construct of carbon dating. What if it's wrong? What if we don't even have a clue as to how old this planet is, how old the human civilization is. I mean, there's growing evidence, honestly, that humans and dinosaurs walk together, but that's not what you're being taught in history books, and that's not what you're being taught by scientists. We are being told that carbon dating, this is what it is. But how do we know? I mean, honestly, we created it. So if we created it, we can just manipulate it and make it however we want it, correct? It doesn't mean that it's right. What it means is we think it's right. But there are so many things we do not know. And I want to talk to you about one thing right now. And you might have heard it on a previous show, but I believe plants. And you can put ferns, you can put any plant that grows out of the ground, even trees, into this category. I believe that they are living, intelligent, sentient beings, things. Quite honestly, I think if you are alive, growing, breathing, it doesn't matter if you breathe air, trees breathe carbon dioxide. It doesn't matter. If you are living and breathing, you have a conscience and you have a soul. And now scientists are starting to understand, and this is the weird part. We'll call them the ancient civilizations of this planet seem to have known all about this. But scientists are now starting to realize that trees talk to each other via a deep underground network. Scientists around the world are coming to the realization that forests, they are acting like one big superorganism. Below the ground, fungal highways connect the trees. Now, they call it a highway, and through this highway, the oldest trees nurture their young. Now, I can hear some of the naysayers already. Tom, this is survival of the fittest. They want to nurture the youngest so their species can survive. But with that being said, these scientists that are studying this, and again, I want to point out that this is what we know as humans. So it's not definitive. This is what we know, but it's very, very interesting. These scientists say that the trees communicate and cooperate with other species. They do this so they can help each other, contrasting the idea of selfish competition. In other words, survival of the fittest. Because if you are a pine tree, you are only going to want your pine tree brothers and sisters, brethren, to survive, right? But no, these trees they're finding are communicating with other species in the forest. It's a whole ecosystem. So the scientists are saying that trees talk to each other. But how? So the scientists that are studying this have found fungi and plants formed symbiotic relationships called a mycorrhiza. Now, this word notably comes from the Greek for fungus and root. Here's how it works. In exchange for sugars and carbon from the trees, the fungi provide what trees require: minerals, nutrients, and a communication network. This, the scientists say, is similar to an internet connection. The mycorrhizal network extends throughout the forest. Fungal threads called hypi, create a highway and merge with tree roots. Now, because this fungi has essentially mind melded with these tree roots, the trees are able to send and receive nitrogen, sugars, carbon, phosphorus, water, defense signals, chemicals, and hormones. Now, amazingly, one tree can connect to hundreds of other trees sending out signals. Along these threads, we'll call them, bacteria and another microbe swap nutrients with the fungi and the tree roots. So now let's talk about ecologist Suzanne Simard from the University of British Columbia. She has studied for 3 decades how trees talk. Now, after extensive experimentation, she has learned how the network she calls the other world connects life in the forest. She says, and I quote, "Yes, trees are the foundation of forests, but a forest is much more than you see." She goes on to say, "You see, underground there is this other world, a world of infinite biological pathways that connect
trees and allow them to communicate and allow the forest to behave as if it's one single organism. It might remind you of sort of intelligence. She says reaching out along this quote-unquote network, there are hub trees, which she calls mother trees. Now, these mother trees can nurture growing saplings. When older trees die, they bequeath their nutrients. And she goes on to say, even some of their wisdom, like how to survive a drought or how to protect yourselves against invaders, is bequeathed under these growing saplings so they may grow stronger. Now, as a consequence, connected trees have a distinct advantage and resilience to outside influences. However, if you cut a tree off from the network, it becomes vulnerable. Often, they succumb to disease at a higher rate, much higher rate, according to Susan. And according to her, she says, sadly, trees that don't tap into a community or don't have a community of trees next to them are vulnerable to diseases and bugs. So for all of us who live in subdivisions, at one point that was a forest. And if you live in a subdivision, there's a tree here, a tree here, a tree here. Oh, there's a tree over here. It's not tree, 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 like a forest. So those trees have been cut off from their connectors, from the connection, from the internet connection, the interwood connection. So therefore, they are more susceptible because they aren't giving the nutrients. They aren't given the knowledge from these older trees. And again, Susan goes on to say, trees talk. Through back and forth conversations, trees increase the resilience of the whole community. Now today, it's looking as if scientists can confirm that trees communicate in a social manner. As I was saying before, this idea is not new. For example, for centuries, indigenous peoples of the Pacific Northwest coast, called the Simajian, have known that life in the forest is interconnected. Now, Suzanne Simard's graduate student, and I'm going to absolutely slaughter her name. We're just not even going to pronounce her first name because it's like 15 vowels and maybe a consonant. I don't know. We'll just call her Teresa Ryan. Teresa Ryan. Teresa Ryan, she's of Tsimshian heritage. And in a recent New York Times piece, Teresa Ryan explained how Simard's studies of mycorrhizal networks are similar to Aboriginal traditions. However, European settlers were quick to dismiss these ideas. She went on to say, everything is connected. Absolutely everything. There are many Aboriginal groups that will tell you stories about how all the species in the forest are connected, and many will talk about below-ground networks. She went on to say how the Native American Menominee tribe substantially harvested the 230,000-acre Menominee forest in Wisconsin. Rather than focusing on money, they focused on ecology and are richly rewarded for it. She says, sustainability. The Menominee believe means thinking in terms of whole systems with all their interconnection consequences and feedback loops. They maintain a large, old, and diverse growing stock, prioritizing the removal of low-quality and ailing trees over more vigorous ones and allowing trees to age 200 years or more so they become what Simard might call grandmother trees. Since 1854, more than 2.3 billion board feet have been harvested, nearly twice the volume of the entire forest. Yet, there is now more standing timber than when logging began. To many, our forests may seem pristine and untouched. But the Menominee tribe wrote in one report, in reality, it is one of the most intensively managed tracts of forest in the Great Lakes states. So the whole premise of this segment is to tell you, my listeners, that everything is connected. I've felt this way for the longest time. Does it mean that I'm absolutely right? No, but I do believe, and I think it has been proven time and time again, that everything is connected. Let's just look at plants and trees in general. They breathe carbon dioxide and exude oxygen. We as humans breathe oxygen and exude carbon dioxide. Now, I'm not, and again, I'm no scientist, but I'm just throwing this out there. Is it any coincidence that both plant life and human life have become more sick as the plants have, or the trees and the plant in the fields have been rezoned for residential and business, that we aren't growing anything on them? So therefore, the amount of oxygen in the air is not as much as it once was. So we as humans are being affected by this. I mentioned it before. I truly believe if you look at the time of dinosaurs, one thing that I know we can prove is the amount of oxygen in the air at that time was much greater than it is now. I truly believe it's because dinosaurs weren't clear-cutting forests. Call me crazy, but I don't see them going through forests with chainsaws and bulldozers just raising everything for cow pastures. I think with more oxygen, we as a species become healthier. Look at hyperbaric chambers. Those are proving to be beneficial in healing and disease control because they're just filled with oxygen. So obviously our bodies require a vast amount of oxygen. With us clear-cutting forests and raising trees and plants to build residential neighborhoods, we're not only hurting ourselves, but we're hurting those trees and plants because they are not connected with the interwood network. Look at all the trees, all the plants that are getting diseases and fungus and dying from them. I think everything is interconnected. I really do. I think we feed off of the plant life and the plant life feeds off us. And the more we just decimate, and again, this is my liberal stance on this. I'm a firm believer that we need to cut back on the amount of forests that we're destroying. Just for example, the Amazon rainforest, we're destroying it, and we need it. We absolutely need the Amazon rainforest because it's a balance. If we overpower these forests, we are not getting the oxygen. We're giving out too much carbon dioxide. I mean, look at it this way. And again, I'm going way off the deep end here, but look at it this way. The trees give us oxygen, okay? We cut down the trees. We are not breathing in as much oxygen. And obviously, if we're putting people in hyperbaric chambers full of oxygen to heal them quicker, we as a human being need oxygen to excel, to regenerate, to fight off illness. So we're not having enough of that in the air. However, if we are expelling carbon dioxide and we are cutting down these trees, there are not as many trees to breathe in that carbon dioxide. So therefore, that carbon dioxide is in there, in the atmosphere. Again, I'm going liberal on this, but that is my thought. I believe we do have some control. Not nearly. We do not control the climate anywhere near what the liberals think we do. But I do think we need to plant more trees. Give us more oxygen. Make us healthier. Plant more trees so we can get rid of the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Carbon dioxide is known to be a greenhouse gas. Greenhouse gases make us hotter. Again, I'm going off the Al Gore end, but I'm not that to that point yet. But I think it is only going to benefit us to plant more trees, to plant more plants that breathe the carbon dioxide and get that out of the atmosphere and give us more oxygen. Have you gone into a greenhouse at all? Honestly, an enclosed greenhouse. Yes, the smells of all the flowers and all the plants, you can smell them, but you feel better when you go in there because you're just exuding carbon dioxide for all these plants, and these plants are just exuding oxygen to you. These plants are alive. These trees are alive. They are breathing. If they weren't breathing, they wouldn't be exuding oxygen. They wouldn't be breathing in carbon dioxide. We are all interconnected. We all work together. Plants, humans. I'm telling you, you're going to find out. I may be long gone by the time this comes out, but we are all interconnected. You are going to find that these trees do communicate with each other. Trees, plants are intelligent. I'm not saying that they have their own language, but they know how to survive, and they transfer that knowledge to their young. It's incredible. And we are just killing these things. And I you might have heard me say this before, but you know, years ago I saw my kid just hitting a baseball bat against a tree. And I'm like, stop it. He's like, why? I'm like, that is a living thing. Bark on this tree is protecting it. If that's like taking your skin, ripping it off and exposing the muscles and the tendon. That's what you're doing to that tree. You're exposing the trunk of the tree, the skin or the insides of that tree. And therefore, you are allowing it to be more susceptible to disease and injury. Respect nature. Because you know why? Nature is neat. And if you didn't think nature is neat, I'm going to play for you a 2 minute 46 second video. And you're going to hear the audio of it, but you'll get the gist of how neat nature is. If this doesn't prove it to you, I don't know what will.
For me, nature is one of the neatest things on this planet. That's why Rodney and I started Nature Walk, because we want everyone to know how neat nature is, instead of just me and Rodney knowing it. How neat is that? That's pretty neat. Without a doubt, coming out into nature is one of the neatest things there is to do. But you also have to be careful. That's why I always try to pack a gun. It's just a little bit, pack some heat. Now this isn't much of a big boy. I don't want to kill the animal, but I do want to warn it and say, hey, I think you're pretty neat, but I respect your distance. There's bears out here, there's mountain cougars, and biting goats. How neat is that? That's pretty neat. Score! Look at this. This is an aspen. You can tell that it's an aspen tree because of the way it is. Wow.
That's how I know.
Wow. What a beaut. You know, it would be a great capper to a great day. It would be seeing a wild animal. I always get real excited at the opportunity to maybe see an antelope or a fox, you know, or some sort of mountain beast. So what I do sometimes is I'll try to, you know, shake things up a little bit, get the earth moving, and call out to them, you know. Here we go. Bup, bup, bup. Hip. Hip, hip, hip. Come on.
Yeah, Lenny.
Come on, girl. Nothing. Gee dang it. I don't see any coming out right now, but I'm not giving up yet. Not too often do you get all this neatness in one location. That's called nature.
In further proof of how neat nature is, listen to this. This man, his life was in danger.
Be real quiet. Quiet. Right up there, if you look real close, you can see a bird. Quiet. Wow. Oh, wow, that's a beaut. What we have right up there is a bird. You have to be really quiet to not alarm the bird, because a lot of times alarmed birds will fly away. Most birds can kill you with their beak. He's looking right at me. Just look at it exist. Birds will fly north, south. It's totally up to them. Oh, he's singing at us. What a neat bird. He's saying it's beautiful up there. I'm gonna tell him he looks beautiful. Gosh, what a beautiful bird. Wow. Gorgeous.
Nature's neat, but it's also dangerous. So respect nature. Hey, if you like what you just heard, go to YouTube and just put in Nature is Neat, and there's a whole series of these guys just promoting nature and how neat it is. So I think we're going to call it a show this week. It's, again, I'm running out of topics to talk about since I can't talk about politics. With that being said, if you have anything you want me to discuss in the paranormal or supernatural, contact me at ghostseeker4@charter.net. Or if you're friends with me on Facebook or the Paranormal Patriot on Facebook, go ahead and message me and I'll do what I can to not talk politics. But, you know, I just, in a way, want to apologize for the first part of the show. It was, I'm very emotional right now. But with that being said, I really, really need some help from my listeners. For those of you who have lost a parent and knew that you were going to lose them via cancer or something like that, how did you approach it? I'm numb. I'm very, very numb at this moment. I don't know how to feel. I don't know how to react. And, you know, I know it's me personally that's going to have to deal with this, but any help, any advice, any support you guys can give me would be greatly appreciated. I'm going through a thing right now, man. I'm just, felt like Joe Biden there. I don't know. I'm really just... This show was literally fly by the seat of my pants. I have no idea. I don't even know. I'm going to go back and listen to this show and not even remember doing it. I am that distraught right now. And I hate to put my problems on you, but listen, I've done it before. And if you guys could pray for my wife, if you guys could pray for my mother, and just honestly pray for me. I'm going through a lot of shit right now. It's not just my wife. It's not just my mother. I've got so much other stuff that I don't want to get into because there's people that really don't want the public to know what is going on, but it is severely affecting me, and just pray for me. Pray for my wife. Pray for my mother. You know, my mom has been in excruciating pain for over a year now. I mean, literally, she had her surgery January 20th, 2020, that completely, essentially gutted her, and she has not been in without pain, excruciating pain since then. It's just give her strength and give her the strength to get over this and accept what's coming and give my family strength. So prayers always, always accepted. Oh, gosh. This was a hard show. In advance, I want to thank everybody for every prayer, every email, every message, and every ounce of support you have given me over these years, and especially now, You know, I've gone through some crap in my years, and just doing this show, I've gone through a lot, and I'm struggling. I really am. I'm not going to deny it. I'm not going to tell you. I'm not going to candy coat it. I'm struggling. I have overcome anxiety, and I can feel it building up again, and it's not a good feeling, and it's not a feeling I want to feel again, and I need your help. Contact me at ghostseeker4@charter.net. If you're friends with me on Facebook or the Paranormal Patriot, just contact me through Messenger. Something. I need to know how to deal with this. I don't know. Literally, I do not know how to deal with this. I've never dealt with this. And my emotions are just running in overdrive, and I'm struggling. And I wish I wasn't. And to be honest with you, I thank every single one of you that are listening. And this is my diversion. And I wouldn't be able to do this if I didn't have you, my listeners. And I can't thank you enough. Thank you for listening to the show. You know, I'm sorry to throw my problems on you guys, man. Again, Joe Biden, all over again. I'm sorry to throw my problems on you, but this is my diversion. This is my outlet. Thank you. That's all I can say. You've been listening to the Paranormal Patriot. My name is Tom Velasquez. Signing off for the week. Hopefully next week will be better. I have no idea what I'm going to talk about next week. Thank you. Thank you.
Love bites on the tips of my shoulders and my hips, and half the surface of my skin shows the markers of your ill.